Two drunk fools with a podcast mic, talking Welsh history. They're out of sight, from Cardiff to Snowdonia, they're on the go. Sharing stories of the past, don't you know? It's Swansea Bay, sipping on the ale, exploring castles and tales of old folklore. From Everest to life to Montfort, Bougainville, they're making history cool. That's the drill. With every sip, they stumble through the past, from the romance to the truth.
Croeso and welcome to another edition of Tales to Wales, the pod that never fails to delve into the chronicles of history, to plunge the past of our dear Cambria, to be the pod version of the Annales Cambriae. I'm Jack, and as always, I'm joined by my co-scribe, the Aneirin to my Taliesin, my little drummer boy, Franco.
Oi, oi,
and today, we have a very special guest, the patriarch of the Cambrian Chronicles himself. Cam, say hello, mate.
Hello.
Short and simple, I like it. Yeah. Hello.
We're taking a gamble because, if we're honest, also, if people who don't know, Cambrian Chronicles is a huge YouTube channel. It's got like 200,000 followers and stuff. Really, really good. But we're avid fans. Like, we watch loads of your stuff. we weren't sure if Cam is just a short for Cambrian or if you're actually called Cam. So we're going to use it.
You can just call me Cam, don't worry.
I was about to say, because we've absolutely shot ourselves in the foot with that intro. If your name's nothing like Cam, we just looked at the bottom thing. Yeah, like,
who
it's
are you guys talking about?
Yeah, this guy's got to be Cam.
Do you want to give yourself a little introduction to our listeners?
Sure, I don't know if I can do any better. When I heard you throw Chronicles in there, I was like, no, these guys are professionals. I know who they're talking about. It's me.
You would like to think you were sat there going like, hang on, who is this then?
Yeah,
the Cambrian Chronicles, that's very similar to me.
Hello, my name's Cambrian Chronicles. I have a YouTube channel on YouTube, where they usually are, and I'm dedicated to Welsh history. I've been doing it for just over 3 years. The channel turned 3 years old like a week ago.
Oh, amazing, mate. Happy birthday for last week.
Yeah, thank you.
Bit too young to be on the pod, if I'm honest. It's a little bit 18. But today...
your first three-year-old guest. Yeah.
And you've also, your camera doesn't work, so we don't know who you are. And the mysterious three-year-old is...
I was just about to say, the listeners don't know, but when old Cambrian Chronicles himself came on, he was like, I've got issues with my camera. I'm starting to think you've got some little voice modulator on now. And we're like, I'm kind of glad the cameras now.
Yeah, because we detect an accent. Yeah. So where are you from? You don't sound like a traditional Cambrian chronicler.
I don't. I get that so often. I've been sounding more English recently. But it's a disease I'm trying to get cured. But I'm from Powys, but because we're near the border, there's a bit of that kind of West Country sort of influence on it. And then also... sorry, I lost my wisdom. And then also, my dad's American, so it has like an American like twang.
It's got the old Yankee Doodle Dollar twang to it, and I like it.
Yeah. But if I was from like the valleys, it'd probably be all right. But because Powys accent's not super strong anyways, it kind of, I just sound like I'm from Staffordshire or something, I think.
Staffordshire.
Sorry, we didn't mean to grill you on your, to prove that you were Welsh there as well. Like, have you got a 21 and me or something like that we can look at and see like some DNA evidence? We don't usually test people's Welshness before they come on. I don't know what's come over him.
I don't have one, but my mum did her ancestry and she got 98% Welsh, 2% English. But the thing came, I know, but it came with saying because the border, obviously the border is basically randomly drawn by Henry VIII, who I think at the time was going mad with gout. Those 2% English would probably were Welsh speakers identified as Welsh. So
I love to think that you were like writing back to the company, like going, when, what board are you doing? From what age? From what year?
Prove it.
Prove anything.
Yeah. I really want to do that thing. Me and Jack, we said we'd do it on the pod, didn't we? Wouldn't we? The old 23.
Yeah, I had one gifted to me years ago.
What?
And Yeah, you know this because the boys made fun of me for a while because it came up that all, you know, what you typically imagine. So it was, I was like 80%, you know, British Irish, Isles, 10% like Scandinavian or something, which is like what you'd expect. But I had 6% in me that was Persian. And it was like, where's that come from? Like, where's
I've always said
some explained.
I know, yeah, some Persian love affair along the line somewhere. I have no idea.
The only thing I know about the Persians is they're big fans of the old rugs. So maybe I should put you down. Yeah. How good you are at weaving. We'll see what kind of gem you can rug out of.
That's a good indicator. I'm sure that'll work out.
Apparently that's what they do at 23 and me. They judge you on your stereotypes. That's
why you boys have been calling me the rug doctor ever since, haven't they? They haven't, by the way. They have not done that.
I swear you never told me that, because if I knew you were Persian, I'd be mentioning it all the time. I'd say that this podcast was hosted by a Welshman and a Persian. It's got that sex appeal to it.
I've 100% told you, boys. Maybe it was so long ago that we like it's gone into the annals, like, you know, the Chronicles, you might say. The Chronicles.
God was so predictable.
I know, easy. It's lowest hanging fruit.
I never see it coming.
Yeah. We're the most like telegraph jokes every single time, and we scramble over each other to say them. No, let me say it.
We're like screenwriting 101 or something. That's called foreshadowing. Keep the ear out, because in about a second I'm going to do the punchline. Yeah.
Well, should we go on with our topic today of Welsh history? We're just going to discuss broad strokes of Welsh history. And each of us are going to talk about three moments or people in time and a little background on why we care about them or like them so much. And we're doing this because, Cambrian Chronicles covers primarily like medieval Welsh history, which I'd say is my favourite. Like, that's my favourite era. But we, since doing this, we've kind of gone into like all aspects of Welsh history, and I just find it all fucking mad. Like, it's all bizarre and fun and interesting. So we thought we'd bring on an actual expert, and we'll also just dive into some modern stuff that we enjoy. So does anyone want to start? Yeah.
Oh, can I just caveat and for the listeners?
Always caveat.
Our guest now is like someone who, well, I know this happens quite often, but it's someone who actually knows what they're talking about, you know, doesn't just like play at it like we do. I'm hoping he's going to look kindly upon us now. And when we're talking about our favourite Welsh bits of history, he's not tutting in his chair going, well, you goddamn fools.
I'm going to hear the word actually a lot. And also, Jack, you said favourite instead of favourite. So
I knew I said it, but I was thinking, the audio will hide it a bit, I hope. This is the downside of having half decent audio now. I've got to actually enunciate.
It is crazy.
There's a peek behind the... Oh, sorry.
No. You go forward, please.
It's a peek behind the curtain because all my stuff's edited, but in real life I talk at the level of like a one-year-old. I stumble over my words and forget what I'm saying like halfway through sentences.
Ours comes across as a bit jumbled anyway, and we do edit, you know. Imagine what it was if we didn't edit.
We spend months editing. There might be a reason why your views get like 1.9 million views in comparison to our mad rambling. But that's the kind of caliber. Like, is that the word? Caliber?
Caliber.
So, oh, God, it's all gone wrong. Yeah. All right, I'm off. Yeah.
You know, you're in the movies where they say he was hit with a 50 caliber bullet. Me neither. No.
All right, well, you start then, caliber brain.
All right, yeah. Oh, there we go, yeah. You fucking shot me with a big caliber bullet now, haven't you? Right, okay, I'll start then. So one of my favourites...
Oh, hang on, sorry, we didn't mention our most important aspect. Okay, yeah. Is anybody having a drink tonight?
Oh, of course, yeah. One of our USPs. Why didn't we think of that? I'm on the rums. I'm on the rummies because I've got a bad belly from the beers. Because we had too many
beers
on the weekend. We had too many beers on the weekend, and now my body doesn't want them anymore. So instead of just stopping outright, I'm just having some rums instead.
And what about yourself?
I've got... I actually don't know what it's called. It says beer on it, but it's spelled wrong. It's B-I-E-R-E.
Oh. They fucked that one up, haven't they?
Some sort of illiterate guy made this one, I think.
It does feel like this is all a hoax. Your name on here just says Cam. Your camera doesn't work.
Cam's actually short for camera. It's all a big joke.
This will be the next... The next YouTube episode, wouldn't it be going like, I tricked these absolute idiots on this podcast?
Yeah,
I'm really sorry my camera doesn't work. There's nothing I can do about it, but you know.
I am starting to worry that you are an actual three-year-old with a voice modulator. Very well-spoken three-year-old. And like, because we're going, oh, what beer are you drinking? Oh, it's like
beer.
It's, you know, I couldn't even tell you what it's called, actually, but you know, it's one of the good ones.
It's a great one. Cronenberg, potentially.
Okay.
Not a crony. Nothing wrong with a crony.
Nothing wrong with a crony.
Yeah, I mean, there is. I might be offended. I literally just found it in the fridge.
Yeah, been sitting at the back for a while. Check his date, mate. Check his date.
You got past the child lock. You got on your big hijack.
This weird gate was in the way.
My friend Chucky was there. And there was some other rugrats.
Parents didn't hear you breaking out of the room at night, did they? This is great.
Well, I'm on the Carlsberg, which is just, you know, your bog standard Danish Pilsner. If you're
what you need, isn't it?
Yeah. But me and Jack, we went away for my wife's 30th and like a big get together. And me and Jack once again took it too far. And once again, we are both in trouble with our wives.
Just incapable of not doing it. I don't know what it is.
I'm excited.
Wrong with us.
Oh, that's a curse. Oh, well.
And a gift.
Yeah. So, Jack, do you want to start with your first nomination for your favourite Welsh?
My first of my three favy bits of Welsh history, yes. So, I've chosen as my first one Llywelyn Ap Rhys, a.k.a. Llywelyn Bren. And we have covered this guy before. We've done a whole episode of him. So if you want like the full version, go and listen to that and pump up our download numbers a bit.
That'll probably be the case for all of our things tonight. But
we'll cover them all.
But it's more just why we like them specifically.
Yeah, I'm just doing like this will be a very quick rundown of like, you know, sort of a whistle stop tour of what he was about and sort of why I think he's like a big time. He's a biggie for me. For those who don't know. Llywelyn Bren, it's I tried to find out, and actually Old Cambrian Chronicles might be into enlightening me this one. I tried to look up what Bren exactly means in the context of his name. And like I know that Brenin is the Welsh word for king.
Oh yeah.
And some sources did say that it was like the reason he's called Llywelyn Bren because it's like a very he had very kingly deeds and a very kingly manner about him. Mm. Others say it's more akin to like a patriot or like a protector. And then the bits were saying like it means more brave. You kind of get the drift of like the general vibe he was giving out. Llywelyn, the top bloke, I don't suppose you have any insight into that.
Embarrassingly, I have no idea. Actually,
just put you on. Just I was wondering if it was I'm just trying to establish my dominance, mate, on my pod. Okay, just trying to shoot
in
you
my
down.
Mind,
really,
I just had to search this in my mind. I was like, "Oh, is it a mutation of Pren?" I couldn't remember what Pren was, and
yeah,
I googled it. Well, that means tree.
Woods and tree. Yeah,
that's where I was
Llywelyn in the wooden.
Yeah. I was thinking
he's a shit actor. Yeah.
But yeah, I'm not sure. I've never heard that one before. Brennan would make sense, but it'd be weird for them to shorten it, especially if they already were writing in Welsh.
Yeah,
that's what I thought. Because like Bren, like I can get where it would be condensed, but there's like, why would it be condensed? But
also,
anyway.
It might be mutated to Brennan as well if it was Brennan.
Yeah, true. But yeah, so you get like I said, you get the vibe anyway. For those who maybe haven't heard of him before, he was like a very. Noble kind of, he had a very noble air about him. I might have picked this guy because it's somewhat recency biased, like I said, because we've done him kind of recently. But it was, I remember when he led the episode on that one, and I just thought he was like the epitome of what we started this podcast for, which was someone who had like a real historic effect, but like I'd never even heard of him, like not even adjacently. And like I said, we did the episode a while ago, so check that out if you want to have a listen. But
we loved it, didn't we?
It was really good. I thought it was one of the most informative ones I think we've done. And for those who don't know, he's a Welsh nobleman and a rebel leader from the early 14th century.
He's a Welsh nobleman.
Yeah. I mean, you know, maybe he had a caring nature about him as well. Llywelyn the noble man, you know, who knows? But anyway, he's sort of remembered, if you do look him up, primarily for leading a revolt against the English in 1316. This is when England was under Edward II. I know I'm probably speaking like this must be kind of boring for you too, I'm sure, because you probably know him already. But for the listeners, if they don't know, I'm going to
it's good to remind people.
And I'm doing a very condensed version. So, but yeah, so this Llywelyn was actually a lot more reluctant than some previous Welsh leaders to turn to violence, especially at the start. He really did sort of try his best at diplomacy with England as well, and sort of tried his best to go through the proper channels with the oppressive English. But yeah, due to a combo of, like I said, the English rule, particularly at the hands of this English-appointed sheriff, Payne de Turbeville, and a load of other local injustices, the Welsh once again had enough and they rose up in rebellion. They had a bit of succession. I'm fucking doing Sean Connery's impressions there. Let me start again. They had a bit of success initially, taking back some castles in Wales that were under English rule, like Caerphilly Castle, but were eventually defeated at Morgraig Castle. Llywelyn would actually surrender and ask that only he be punished for the revolt, which garnered big respect from his own troops as well as some English commanders who actually petitioned on his behalf to their king to pardon Llywelyn. Sadly, a right bastard named Hugh Despenser took Llywelyn to Cardiff Castle and had him hung, drawn and quartered, displaying bits of his body across the county. Supposedly, this was all done with very dubious due process as well.
Sorry, I know it's quite a pivotal part, but I can't have to say it kills me aneurysm. Do you know you have like names like Anita Biggin? Huge Despenser feels like one of those names where it's like a pun name.
Oh, yeah, Huge Despenser.
Sorry, just had to get that out. Suffocating on those words.
Sorry. Just absolutely disgrace Llywelyn Brent's memory. That's no problem. Guy who died for this country, that's no problem. Anyway, so a handful of English martial lords were discussed with what happened. And I'm not going to be able to say this fucking word now without knowing that you're going Huge Despenser. Anyway, a handful of English martial lords, they were disgusted with what Despenser had done. They actually urged the king to exile him from court, which he didn't do, because apparently Despenser was one of Edward II's most favourite boys. I won't go into too much detail, like I said, but essentially, to speedrun the events, all of this inspired another series of rebellions where the Welsh actually allied themselves with the English martial lords, I was listening to this that you were saying, Franco, I was like, that's mad. Like, I've never heard of that before. And this led to Despenser's lands being raided, his exile, and then when he returned to court, the rebellion came back even harder, leading to not only Despenser receiving the same death he gave Llywelyn, being hung, drawn, and quartered, but also to King Edward II being captured, deposed, imprisoned, and quite likely killed. So even though that's missing out a load of details, I know, I'm sure you can see why I love old Brenny boy's story. It's got everything you need, really, isn't it? Noble leaders, leading underdog armies against oppressive rules, sacrifice, fanning the flames of rebellion, some enemies becoming allies, some allies becoming enemies. You know, it's got everything you need. Make a Llywelyn Brand movie, that's all I'm saying.
And he's like unknown, and he's like from, he was like, this happened in Cardiff, and we're from Cardiff, and we don't know about that story. And that's like,
he was buried on Greyfriars Road, wasn't it?
Not sure. I can't remember. I know that's Greyfriars Road. They were like the monks, weren't they? The Greyfriars who'd often look after the poor people, and they helped Owington do it a lot. I'm not too sure about Llywelyn Brand.
It's because I heard he absolutely loved Pulse that used to be there. So he was like, fucking just bury me where Pulse is, man.
Well, yeah, I agree. I mean, he's a tough one to... He's also not very well known. He's loyal. His wife was like a legend as well. He had like six sons and like they all came to fight for him.
Yeah, they all like fought in the rebellion with him, didn't they? So he's such a good, like... A great story, especially if you're like a little, you buzz off like the Welsh patriotism and like if you want like a Welsh Braveheart equivalent, he's someone that fits the boots so hard and like is, like you said, someone I never even knew about before. So yeah, that's why I picked him as my first little pick.
Do you want to go next? The Cambrian Chronicler.
I can try my best to follow Llywelyn Brand. So a lot of the stuff I focus on is like quite early medieval, and I wanted to pick my original pick was going to be Owain Gwynedd, but I remembered you guys had a covered him before, so I figured I'll do someone a bit more unknown.
Nice.
You would have probably blown our fucking coverages of him out of the water. But that, so thank you for that.
Yeah. No, I loved your guys' coverage of it. It's such a good one. And Gwyneth is one of my favorite kings in Welsh history. I found him so interesting. He was one of the earliest, like, sort of, he's got a very complete story, I think, compared to a lot of the stuff I read. There's way more information on him. And I think his victories against Henry II, which is against such like impossible odds, really, I don't know, it's almost inspirational. It's such an interesting thing to read about.
Mm.
And such a big what if, because Henry II almost was killed in battle against him. That would have been such a huge pivotal moment in English history. It almost happened.
We hypotheticalize and go, you know, oh, imagine this had gone just a different way.
Yeah.
What would be like the alternate history?
The butterfly,
not only Wales, but like Britain sort of thing, you know? I totally get that.
Same when you think about Edward I attacking Scotland first, not Wales first, because by the time he got so that I always think of that one. But sorry, I'm interrupting. So who's the next? Instead of Owen Gwynedd, then who would you go for?
I'm going about, when was Owen Gwynedd? About 1,000? I'm going about 400 years earlier to a man named Cadwallon ap Cadfan.
Oh.
Sadly, he doesn't have a cool epithet, so I'm just going to call him Cadwallon.
That's cool, though. It's Cadwallon. That's memorable because he's one of the few that isn't just called Owain, Llywelyn, Griffith, or any app version equivalent. Yeah.
So he was... So in 616... there was a big battle called the Battle of Chester. You might have guessed it was around the city of Chester that we have today.
What?
I know, crazy. I was surprised when I found that out.
Yeah.
The kings of Northumbria, sort of northern England, came down and conquered this sort of big Welsh coalition. And this was the first battle of an English ruler against specifically like Welsh rulers, like in modern day Wales.
Was this, not to interrupt, sorry, mate, is this to do with... Does the leader of Penguin, was he about this battle, or his brother or something like that?
His brother, yes.
I knew something else. When you said Battle of Chester and Northumbria, I was like, that rings a bell, that does. Sorry, I'm just making sure that I'm actually learning stuff as we've been doing this.
I was going to say, I love this, because I think this is the toughest stuff to get actual notes on, because it's a lot harder to, so I often just skip by it. So I've now got someone who's good at it telling me it. This is like my actual dream.
Which one of us are you talking about? Hang on.
The boss baby. Yeah, yeah.
You guys don't know my real name? I don't know why my parents call me boss as a first name. Anyways.
Sorry, yeah, interrupt you anyway. You crack on, sorry.
It was the King of Penguin's brother. I don't remember which one, there's three. Probably should look it up. I'm not going to bother. I think it was Gugon Redsword was his brother, potentially.
I think you're right there, yeah. I don't know why I'm the one saying yes. I think you're right, the expert on our part at the moment. That sounds about right.
That video was a year ago, and because I have to watch it so many times to make it, I never look at them again, so a lot of it's left my head.
Oh, we're the same, mate. By the time we've written notes and we record notes and then we edit it, we're like, I'm so sick of my own voice. Yeah. Like, I never want to listen to anything again.
All right, so the Northumbrians beat the Welsh at Chester and set a precedent for the next 667 years of the English trying their best to conquer Wales. Extremely slow process. For comparison, the Romans did it in about, I think it was about 30. So, you know, we're not keeping score, but they've come last. Pardon me.
The revenge of the English has just got
to come back to fight. That 2% English DNA is fighting back. Following this Northumbrian victory, they get sort of real big in their britches, and King Edwin of Northumbria allegedly, although this is a little bit disputed if it's serious or potentially a bit of a metaphor, it's a bit complicated, lays siege to a bunch of sort of islands, like the Isle of Man and Ynys Mon. Like I said, it's a bit, I've seen a few debates about whether this really happened, but we won't go into that now. But he seems to sort of lay siege to Ynys Mon, and the King of Gwynedd at the time, Cadwallon, is exiled. He flees to probably Ireland for about a year, and he comes back absolutely full of anger and ready to take revenge.
Mm.
Luckily for him, the English kingdoms, Anglo-Saxons, don't get along very well. So he's able to ally with a man named Penda of Mercia. And they say, well, the Northumbrians are trying to invade you. They're trying to invade me. Why don't we just go stab him? And so they decide to team up in 634. And they march all the way up to the north. And they defeat him at a battle of Hatfield Chase. And they kill the Northumbrian king. And this would be... really, after this, and a little bit after, this would be the only sort of really successful Welsh expedition out of Wales.
Oh, yeah.
Because they would, like, fight back. They would beat the English a bunch of times in Wales. Plenty of them have been successful in Wales. But Cadwallon went all the way into, sort of, like, up to where the Pennines are.
Wow.
And killed the King of Northumbria and his sons.
That's cool. And
which book was it? The historian Mark Morris that I last read claims that Cadwallon then seems to have served as a ruler of Northumbria. He's referenced as like dividing lands and seems to have been like a bit of a tyrant up there, because a man named Bede, the father of English history, was so sort of offended that a Christian king, Cadwallon, killed another Christian that it sort of sent him into a bit of a tizzy, and he claimed that Cadwallon wanted to kill every English person in Northumbria, wow. Which is a little bit, just a little bit dramatic.
I love that, though, yeah, because like you said, it's so, you know, even if you touch on the basics of the battles in Wales and things like that, we do seem to do really well with the home advantage. You know, the battles we win in Wales, the battles we win are more often in Wales than not. But yeah, I love it when you hear of us going on little excursions, even if we are going to slaughter every Englishman in the in the area.
Well, that's what Bede claimed. It's worth minding. Bede was very offended because he really liked the king, and the king was Christian. And of course, if he was Christian, he should have had God's protection. That didn't work. So obviously that means Cadwallon was like secretly the devil and so like that.
Yeah.
There's a lot of trying to justify it.
So Cadwallon, just going, you should have had God's protection. So suck it, mate. It's done, all right? Yeah, obviously not.
Cadwallon ruled Northumbria only for about a year until he was killed by one of the king's successors named Oswald at another battle called Heavenfelth, where Oswald apparently, although again because of all the mess with like the Christians fighting Christians, apparently Oswald erected like a huge cross and was like, please God help me kill this man. And I didn't know you were allowed to pray for that, but apparently you are, because Oswald managed to kill Cadwallon and drove the Welsh out of Northumbria.
Ooh, yeah,
that's where ambition gets you.
Yes, it's but it's interesting because a lot of the references to Cadwallon and Penda, this big sort of English king, Cadwallon seems to be the one in charge. He seems like the senior partner. So it's really like a big like Welsh excursion with sort of English help.
Well,
and it's something you don't really hear about. You sort of hear like England sort of slowly conquering Wales piece by piece.
Yeah.
But and then that's why I find Cadwallon interesting.
Until they push him back out again. But yeah, I remember like doing in history where it's like, it might be Owen Glyndwr, where they have two battles on a hill, but they never fight because it's like the first time in ages that the Welsh are pushed into English land, but they didn't really know how to go on the offensive. It was like, we know in Wales, we know our little tricks, and we can.
I think I've heard about that one. Is that when they're both on like the summits of, peaks of a valley or something like that, and they're basically saying whoever goes down first to confront the enemy is basically dead.
Yeah.
So neither of them want to move, and they both end up going, should we just call it a day? Yeah, call it a day.
Yeah, well, fuck this, I'm going home.
Yeah, might as well.
Yeah. Anyway, see you next time, mate. Am I right to go next? We finished
your
with... Okay, well, I've got Gwen Llian next to mine, because not all of mine are based in the Middle Ages, but this one I think is probably, she is my favourite person from Welsh history. I think.
Say, ever since we came across her, you bloody
j'adore Gwen Llian. I've been like collected now for quite a while, like different books. And one of the ones I'm reading is like this guy who decided to start writing about Welsh people. It wasn't like his forte beforehand, but when he hit like middle age, he was like, do you know what? I've always loved it. I'm going to actually study it. And he wrote one about Gwen Llian, and he's like, listen, I'm not just being a historian, I'm just telling you a good story. And I really like that. And I've read that a couple of times. And what I really like about this one is like, it kind of, I like it when Wales is quite different to other people's history. And unlike like many contemporary European societies, like Welsh culture, even up until like the 1100s, 1200s, women they held significant power and influence. They weren't like wallflowers who just were there to would be involved in politics or war. So like, she had like a really active role in leading the troops into battle, leading at the front, and like she had command over like military strategies. And like, I always just think, what a ledge. Like it highlights this comparatively egalitarian nature of Welsh. I mean, that's a bit grandiose, but like in terms of gender, women were never seen like lesser. They were seen just as ferocious and dangerous and skillful.
Well, they had a lot better run over in Wales, didn't they? Even from like Celtic times and stuff, where you were just you kind of valued for your merit rather than
your gender.
Just dismissed for your gender off the bat. Whereas like when the Normans came over, and well, even the Anglo-Saxons and everything before that, Vikings as well. It's Oh, the Vikings, I suppose, had shield maidens and stuff, didn't they?
Yeah, but what I mean with them, but they were surprised to see the how fierce the Welsh women would fight back.
So that's exactly, yeah. Like you could, have, you know, Boudica is a classic example of an actual Welsh, Celtic, like warrior princess, if you like.
But we're not on about Boudica here.
We're on about bloody Boudica. Sorry. Yeah, carry on.
I like that. There's this kind of romantic nature of her story, which is probably slightly rose-tinted like glasses. But like you read about her and her husband, who was Prince of Deheubarth, and like I think he was prince, not king, because he wasn't kings in Welsh history. Maybe I'll ask you this in a second. But kings will always Wales didn't have a huge amount of kings. We often had Tywysogion or Tywysogs, which is like. It means prince in literal translation, but it often means more than that, doesn't it?
It's more than that in Welsh, isn't it? It's more like leader or like.
Well,
sort of,
should we refer to the Chronicle? Like, do you have any insight onto this?
Luckily, this I actually do. I did a video about the Princes of Wales ages ago.
Oh, I know. I was just about to steal everything from it and claim it as my own. Well, like, go on. I guess you could have it then.
I guess. there were translating the terms a bit tricky because the Welsh had a lot of influence from the Romans, and they were Christian. And basically, every sort of independent Christian ruler was given the title Rex, which in English means king. So there were a lot of Welsh kings, or what we'd call like Brenin, or more anciently a Rhi or Rhi. but there was quite a few kings, but it was Owain Gwynedd, I believe you mentioned it in your episode, wrote a letter to the King of France asking for an alliance. And he refers to himself as Princeps, which was a title that the Roman emperors had. And in Welsh, we'd call that Tywysogion, which I believe is like a leader. The English, because the English would call them princes. So, about the 11th century, we'd have a lot more princes, as that became a bit more fashionable to call yourself prince.
Rather than king.
But we've commented before with me, Frank, on like the interest. It's interesting that English would use, prince, that's like lesser than
a king
kind of thing, whereas in Wales, back when it was, like you said, when it was coming to fashion, it was much more of a callback to that princeps or princeps, which means actually like it's almost like emperor leader. It's even better than a king, if you like. So it's like a weird like dynamic there between the two countries right next to each other that decided to use different titles.
Yeah, and it's the thing is the English didn't always see it as lesser, because Henry II, when Owain Gwynedd called himself prince, was absolutely furious.
Oh, really?
Because it was a title, it was like better, it was like Roman emperor. They couldn't call themselves emperors, because like, I believe there was only supposed to be like one Christian emperor. I don't know that much yet, but he was so angry. His advisor, I think it was Thomas Becket, had to write to the King of Scotland when he's coming to visit, saying, please do not bring up Owain Gwynedd and his sort of upstart princely title, because Henry II will be very moved and offended.
I love that.
I think after Edward I, Dr.
No, 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 go on. I love it, man. I can hear it all day. Go on, what are you going to say?
I was going to say, after Edward I recreated, the title Prince of Wales, that's sort of when it was seen like today as sort of a lesser, like below the king. Because prior to that, I don't believe I don't know what they called their heirs, but they didn't hold the title Prince of something. I know the Anglo-Saxons had like Duke of Wessex, I believe it was, or Earl of Wessex even.
what do they used to call it, like back in the day when you like a fling or something? It's got like a word fling at the end of it.
The Anglo-Saxons were, I think, athling, athling, and the Welsh borrowed it for edling. Some Welsh sources use the word edling. Right. It's very few borrowings from Anglo-Saxon. Boring fact of the day.
Well, I was going to say, we usually weren't too chummy with them, were we? So no, imagine we wouldn't much, steal too much from them.
But yeah, her and her husband, Griffith, who was the Prince of Haybarth, they had this kind of like romantic, it seems romantic, but like 20 years of like fighting the Normans and like being like these outlaw prince and princesses who would like steal the swords and shields of the dead of the soldiers they just killed, and they'd steal the food to feed their people, and they like really loved, and they lived in the forest, and when they'd go to battle, because the classic Welsh guerrilla style, when they started like to ambush these soldiers, she would take some kids and he would take some kids. So if ever they got captured, one part could come and save the other. So, you know, these two loves who got separated, if I was in prison, my wife would come and save me. And it's like this, it's such a romantic notion of it. And like after her execution, so in people who don't know, I'm sure you I won't go into too much of the story because you can go listen to it. We've done a Gwen Llian episode. But after her execution, Gwen Llian's name became like this giant rallying cry for Welsh forces to fight against the Normans. And even like 150 years later against the English, it's like this thing that lasted forever because she was like an embodiment of like the spirit of this like this small nation fiercely defending its land and culture against invaders. And it's like uniquely Welsh, I think, and incredibly like brave and this resistant nature. I love it. I think it captures everything I like to idolize.
That's another Braveheart-esque tale, isn't it, that you could make by 100%.
So yeah, that's my Gwen Llian. Back to you, Jack.
Yeah, go on then. My second one is it. So this one is slightly, well, it is related to my first one, to Llywelyn Bren. This one, I was wondering, because I know the premise of this episode was to do like our three best people or events. And I was thinking, oh, I'm with a couple of other history buffs. So I was thinking we might like all the cool ones, we might like think about the same ones. Yeah. So I've gone for one that's a little bit smaller scale. But I like him just because he's got absolute brass bollocks between his legs. And this guy is Ivar ap Meurig, a.k.a. Ivar Bach or Ivar the Small in English. We covered this guy, but very briefly, we did like a Princes of Wales episode where we did like a quick fire thing of like, I can't remember what it was, like four or five princes. And we covered him in that. But he was the great grandfather of Llywelyn Bren, which I found out in researching it today, actually. I didn't realize they had that connection. So a family of absolute primo Welsh rulers, right? He was another Welsh noble. He was a leader of the Lord of Senghenydd, and he was known for his bold actions against the Anglo-Norman lords in the 12th century. So during this time, the Normans were in control of the surrounding lands of Morgannwg, or Glamorgan, as they called them. And Ivar was a relatively small patch of Welsh-controlled land in the sort of middle of it. The Lord of Glamorgan, William Fitzrobert, was always looking to gain more and more lands. He'd made several attempts to push into Senghenydd, something Ivar kind of knew that he could only hold out against for so long. So the deed that put him on the historic map, as it were, took place in the mid-12th century when Ivar, sick to the back teeth of having his land chipped away at, he decided to stage a raid on Cardiff Castle, the home of his Norman lord, aka that William Fitzrobert I just mentioned. Ivar took a handful of men to Cardiff, supposedly. They climbed the walls of the castle. Again, this is, I don't know if this is absolutely true, but the stories say that they climbed it barehanded. They got to the top, they got to the ramparts, they found William Fitzrobert, his wife, his young son, they kidnapped them and whisked them back to the forests of Senghenydd. Ivar held the family as hostages and negotiated every inch of land the Normans had taken from him back, as well as huge chunks that had never belonged to him in the first place, as a kind of restitution for the effort he'd had to go through to sort this whole mess out. So not only did this embarrass the Normans, but apparently emboldened the local Welsh population as well to not take nearly as much shit from the Normans in general, like a lot more chopsy when it came to being like disciplined and sort of dealing with authority. And Ivar's family, that his entire line would be a thorn in the Norman side for around the next century, operating out of Senghenydd, eventually culminating, like I said before, in his great-grandson Llywelyn Bren's rebellion. So yeah, that's Ivar Bach. Very, very short and sweet. But I just thought, this guy's got an absolute pair of cojones on him. And I was like, he's like, you know what? I'm sick to death of this. I said, lads, should we go and just lay siege to the fucking Cardiff Castle and take the Lord himself hostage? I was like, that's deserves some respect. It deserves some respect.
Yeah, Ivar Bach is such a good story. Mm. I read one, you know, there's a, in the middle of Cardiff Castle, there's like that big diagonal bit of stone. That's like the old Norman walls. Oh, I read one source that claimed that we don't know when that was built, but Ivar Bach might have inspired that to be built. That's how much he got under their skin to re-fortify the inside.
Yeah, right. I want it to be made with very smooth rocks this time. I do not want anyone to be able to climb it bare-handed. All right?
I do like that kind of castle. You can see the Roman parts at the bottom and the Norman parts and the modern parts. Like it's a place that's just been constantly built upon and smashed about, and then have little scamps like him kicking about causing trouble.
Yeah. I like it whenever you visit a castle like that, anywhere in Britain, really, where a lot of them, you know, it's very rare that they are the exact structure that they were when they were built, because obviously that's like damn near impossible. Yeah. But I like seeing when you have that, like you said, the brickwork or the stonework, rather, where you can see the difference of it. I love all seeing that. It's great.
The old, I don't know if you guys knew, did you know the old walls, the Roman walls of Cardiff Castle were rebuilt, but they used to be covered in dirt. It's a fun thing. they built a big ditch, like, because the walls were a bit ruined by the time the Normans got there. They built it like a big, turned it to like a big sort of dirt wall. Ooh. But it was covered in dirt for so long, when the Marquis of Bute or whoever it was tried to get rid of them to renovate, they found these walls. I'm like, what the hell is this?
Oh, they didn't even know it was there.
No one voted down that it was there. They just found stone underneath the dirt. Like, what?
Love that. Who's put this here? Who has done this? This shouldn't be here.
Do you want to go for your next one?
All right. Let's see. I wrote down a bunch. I know you said three, so I wrote down five, because I struggle at counting. I'm only three. Yeah, I haven't read my numbers here.
This is how you get the fucking big time YouTube channel, isn't it? You always over deliver.
I wanted to go for another guy. I think the struggle with a lot of medieval, because I focus on medieval Wales, as I've said like eight times, a lot of it focuses on kings because there's not a lot of everyday people. So. Unfortunately, I do have like several kings, but I figured I'd bring at least two that I thought was really fascinating and that you guys haven't mentioned before. So the second one I have, which you may have heard of, is Maelgwn Gwynedd.
Yeah.
You might have heard of him.
I think I've heard
of
him, yeah.
I have, but I don't know why.
I think I might have put him down somewhere as like something to, like, I remember hearing of him and being like, ooh, make a note of that.
Yeah, I've definitely written the word down, Maelgwn, because I definitely know that name.
You might say Maelgwn. I don't know. It depends on the accent in Wales, I think. I'm used to saying Maelgwn, but I don't know. You guys are in South Wales. You might say it differently to me.
Yeah, is it actually Maelgwn?
Maelgwn, yeah.
Gwyn, yeah. Oh, no, I don't think there's a Y. I think it's just GWN. But some people do spell it.
Oh, Maelgwn? I'm not sure then.
Maybe I don't know. Yeah. Hit us with your Maelgwn.
So I find him really interesting. There's a monk in the, what would it be? The year 540, so that's the 6th century again. Apparently, I have a tendency for that. A monk called Gildas was really, really angry because these Anglo-Saxons, who were pagan at the time, were defeating all of these Christian Britons. So obviously that means that the Britons were wrong because they must have been possessed by the devil. That's the only reason. And the reason he thought that was because their kings were really horrible people. And one of these horrible people was Maelgwn of Gwynedd. So he was the son of a man named Cadwallon, who sort of conquered the island of Ynys Môn. Maelgwn probably ruled around there, but he has there's a ruin of a castle associated with him above Llandudno in North Wales.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what it's called. Castell Deganwy, I think, opposite Conwy.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah. So he supposedly sort of ruled around there. And he was a really horrible human being.
He was a bastard, yeah.
Extremely violent and tyrannical. He was married to a woman. We don't know who it was. Some sources say it was a fairy. Probably aren't accurate. Other sources say it was a real life woman, which I think I'm inclined to believe more.
You weren't there, man. You weren't there, right?
And it says here that obviously The marriage says, till death do us part. And Gildas says, well, someone told Malgun that, and he seems to have taken that very literally because he didn't want to be with her anymore. So he knew he couldn't divorce her, so he killed her. He thought, I want to remarry. I really like my brother's son's wife. They're married, so if I kill him, she's available.
Taking the vows literally. I like
Literally, yeah. But luckily for Gildas, someone persuaded him. It was a saint in South Wales, actually. So shout out to you guys down there. Persuaded him very, very briefly against his ways. But unfortunately, the actual line Gildas uses is, like a dog to vomit, he returned to his sinful ways.
Wow.
You old dog.
Yeah. He returned to his sinful ways. And at the time Gildas was writing, Malgun was still alive. But a much later story says that a big plague, possibly the plague of Justinian, it was... what's it called? The Black Death. I don't know what its actual scientific name is.
Yeah.
The Black Plague came to Britain.
Bubonic, or is it bubonic?
Bubonic. That's it. A spout of bubonic plague came to Britain, and Malgun sort of put himself away in a local church. But very stupidly, as we all learnt during the pandemic, he looked through the keyhole of the door, which of course you're never supposed to do. He immediately got infected by the Black Plague from outside and died.
He was out clapping for the NHS, and they bloody got him, didn't they? Christ.
And he died of disease, which I think is quite it's almost poetic in a way, because he's this big. Also, Gildas criticizes Malgun actually for sort of being from the vine of Sodom, which some people have interpreted as maybe Malgun was possibly bisexual, or Gildas was just trying to roast him. Despite this criticism, Gildas very sort of describes how Malgun is also big and tall with his big broad shoulders that his kingly
projection, classic projection, yeah.
But he's this,
he was absolutely gorgeous. I hate him actually.
But he was physically a huge guy. Both him and his father were known, nicknamed the Tall. So for this time, he could have been like, I don't know, even like 5'10" would have been tall for this time. But he's like this really physically big, strong, powerful guy, and he was just killed by disease, which I think is quite poetic, really.
You know, I don't feel too sorry for him, considering his attitude to marriage.
The murder.
So,
another part I find really funny was that he became really popular with the saints' lives when they sort of like obviously wrote down the lives of the saints. And they like to put him as a local sort of bad guy for them to literally use like sort of superpowers on. Several times, like I'm trying to think, there's St. Cadog, I think, is from South Wales. Malgun tries to invade South Wales, so he casts a fog on him and then makes him blind so he can't see anymore. And then there's another one. He tries to trick a saint from Ceredigion. He gives him a bag saying, please look after my jewels, but secretly the bag is full of moss and rocks. Classic prank. I'm sure you guys must have done that a lot in school.
You were appealing to Frank's better nature there.
Yeah, I'm just writing this down. Moss and frogs.
And he came back, he's like, oh, give me my jewels then. It's like, oh, what? There's moss and rocks in here. You must be lying. But luckily, this is a great one to use if someone ever accused you of lying. The saint said, don't worry, I'll stick my hand in this boiling water to prove I'm not lying. And he did, and I guess that works. I'm not really sure how, but
I was just say, did he have some? But I was expecting you to then be like, but he done this. It was actually cold, bubbling water. But no, he boiled it and go, well, gotta get through this now.
The same guy also brings a cow back to life. So I think some things are a bit outside of the realm.
Yeah, I don't want to accuse all the saints of antiquity of being bullshitters, but like some of the shit you read and that they've done, it's like we did. Was it Saint David one time and some guy was on about coming over from Ireland on a sea serpent? I was like, of course, mate. Yeah, nice
but it is
one,
better than the saints who just get people better from drinking water.
That's true.
Yeah, they're the ones like, oh, I drank this spring and it got
the
me
ones
better.
Who go, it was a magical spring. It's like, it's probably just clean. It's probably just a bit clean water. Yeah, isn't it? Yeah, sorting you out.
Start drinking water filled with feces. Like, oh, I'm so much better.
Yeah,
thank you so much.
Literally stop drinking shit water, and they're going, that's the power of God, baby. No, that's what I'll do for you.
Right, so my next one then is, it's not a person, it's a sport. So I'm doing Knapan, which we've mentioned before, we've done an episode on. But as a quick recap, it was like a huge rugby match slash football match slash giant fight that would like stretch from town to town or parish to parish. And your aim was to take this ball that was put in the center back to your parish. So say if we did this in the middle of like between Cardiff and Swansea, for example, it wouldn't be that big, but just for an example, if they put the ball down in like Bridgend, we had to get the ball back to our parish before like the end of the day.
No, isn't it the other? I thought it was the other parish, isn't it? You got to get it into
enemy
camp.
I was reading up on it again today, and I don't think it is. I think it's back to yours because lots of time people would give up before the end of the day if it was in someone's parish. Like,
and then
they
just go back to the pub.
Back to theirs.
The pub back then, but you know what I mean. A quick equivalent of
tavern.
Yeah, well, maybe you, Jack, should go listen to the episode and learn a thing or two.
I hate to accuse you of being correct. Yeah.
So it's like this big rugby slash football game, and it's like thousands of years old. Well, it was like they think it could have started like the 4th or 5th century. And it was a way of like practicing ready for war stuff. So you're using your agility, you're using your strength, you're using your cunning, you're using your ability to like read a battle, read a field, which you might need to do in a battle. How you best like utilize your numbers, because you'd have like sometimes various numbers. And it was just like a really physical game where there was very few rules. But what I really like about it is like with this like socialist attitude to it. It was a game for all classes, which unlike lots of medieval sports over time, which were restricted often to the nobility, Knappan was played by the salt of the earth, commoners, you know what I mean? As well as the higher ups in society. Although the higher ups would often ride horses and like smash down on the working class, which doesn't really
I was
really
just about to say, wasn't it? Like if you were upper class, you got like, you could play, but you could also have a horse and like a weapon. Cudgeling people on the way down.
Yeah, you could cudgel.
Bring that back for rugby, I think. That'd be great.
And I'm not so, the game's not without fault, I grant you that. But other games in like medieval times were set for like the gentry, and like it wasn't like anyone could play them, whereas this was at least communal.
At least they gave the option to get cudgeled by a guy on horseback, for God's sake. You know, loads of sports back then didn't give you even that.
Well, lots of sports back then wasn't communal. It was like, oh, we'll go pheasant hunting, or we'll do like, you know, like polo or something like that, where it's for this year was a huge thing for the community, a huge thing for everyone to get involved with, and it'd be the talk of the town, and it was often linked to like religious periods, so like the time during like Lent and like Shrove, I think it's called Shrovetide, for the period before Lent. And I think it's like it really reflects the communal nature of Welsh society, where this game is like this big social cohesion and local pride for one town via another. And I love like the physicality and the competitiveness of it, like the rough and readiness that you still see today in rugby.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like minimal rules like emphasizes that we ain't some nerds who want to sit around and study the
concussion prevention. I don't think so. I'm bringing a fucking bat to this game.
When they banned the cudgel, everyone said, oh, the game's gone soft, you can't do nothing no more. Yeah.
Down the local tavern, oh, this is a joke, I don't want to watch anymore.
But it like it captures also, it like mirrors the rugged landscape and like the resilient character. I don't know, it's like it feels like a game bred for Welsh. It's like it's a test of like just brutality and like I don't know. I love it.
I remember
it.
When we covered it before, didn't we, on an episode when and we talked about they tried to like do a revival of it. Was it in like
the '70s
or eighties? Yeah. I can't remember now.
Oh, really?
And it was if you look, you can find the footage of it. I think BBC covered it or something.
Yeah.
And Christ, these guys, they're walking away from the pitch and they're like bleeding and they're just like, that was rough, man. Like I've been playing rugby all my life, but because you can just, there's no rules about like, I'm assuming for that, they said no cudgels, no horseback. But they were like, you know, there's nothing to stop you. I mean, there's stories in there about,
we discussed like how, like,
ripping hair out and
and like one of the local like cads in the neighborhood who was like accused of sleeping with people's partners had like his hair pulled out and he was like, oh, it's only a game, mate, and it's all but I like that it's like it's like I said, it's like uniquely Welsh contribution to like the history of physical games. It's like it's distinct enough from other neighboring ones, and like they had a beach version and a like a countryside version. But it took a bit of a battering when common land was ripped up by the Normans during like the feudal system, when that was introduced. You know, there was like the common land was no longer, especially then by the time of like Henry VIII, who like banned it, not because he was like out of deep concern of it being a Welsh thing, but more because it was causing so many injuries for the common folk who he deemed were his working class. And he kind of set up the working class in Wales. So he didn't want to take a risk of them being injured, then they can't work.
So we got into thanks for the fact that I can't watch bloody Knappan on Sky Sports now and then.
Yeah. It did like limp on for a couple more centuries, but nowhere near with the same ferocity or like fever pitch of it being. And also, it used to
be
specific.
Like the bigger games used to be like 1,000 odd people, wouldn't it?
Playing. Like, yeah, it was like 1,000
silly
a
amounts
thousand.
Of people. Yeah,
yeah.
I'd be interested when the last one was, if you could find that.
Well, I think they did some in they did some in like Victorian times when like Welsh traditions became back. Do you know like things like there was like a bit of a Welsh revival, wasn't there, for Welsh customs?
Like the Eisteddfod bringing brought back and stuff like that.
Exactly, and the Mad Horse, the Maddie Lloyd and stuff like that.
Oh, really? That's it, yeah.
So, yeah, so during that time there were some more, but even for them, for like Victorian sensibilities, it was like, oh, good God, this is a bit
much.
I was
about to say, well, those Victorian pussies, no chance they'd be putting up. They'd be playing that, would they? They're not made of stern enough stuff.
I hate hearing you say the word pussy.
I didn't even put like the normal lilt I usually put on that. Like I can make it sound way worse if you want. Like honestly,
it really does go through me. Right. Over to you, Jack. You'll go.
Oh yeah. Speaking of, right, back to me. Don't worry. This little segment does not include that word, so I won't offend your ears.
My favorite thing about Wales,
right? You know, it's actually about Barty D, the pirate, and you know, what you like most of all. Bit of pussy, boys.
Oh my God.
No, he did not. He might have done. I don't know. But that's not one of the main things that came up when I was looking at. So, Barty D, again, done this guy on the pod. I'm just trying to plug the pod back again.
on your podcast.
On my pod. You know it. You love it. Go back and listen again. Yeah. So, Barty D, or Black Bart, or Bartholomew Roberts. Was pirate during the 1700s. Did you know? I think I mentioned this to you, Franks. Maybe he's actually related to my youngest brother, Harry.
What?
Yeah, because he's Harry Roberts. Because all right, my mum didn't listen to this, so it's okay for me to say it. But she's had many a partner over the years.
So a bit of background. Jack's a wide, far-reaching family.
I was worried where you were going to go with that. You're like, just FYI, his mum's a slag, right? No. But no, Harry's got a different dad to me, and through that father, through his patriarch, he's apparently related to Bartholomew Roberts. Didn't ask, maybe should have, how he could prove that. I want to see some documentation, but I like that, the romantic nature of it all.
Yeah, we'll just have it. We'll take it. Brother doesn't drink an awful lot, does he?
So he's basically the same.
Well,
he's pirated more ships on the seven seas than any other man.
No, but Barty D was a teetotaler, wasn't he?
He was, yeah. So, I was about to get into that. That's the thing I like the least about him, right? But no. So anyway, he was Barty D. Again, those who don't know, maybe new to the pod or anything like that, he was he worked on a merchant ship when it was captured by pirates, led by another Welsh captain, Howel Davis, who quickly saw Barty's potential as a navigator. Barty was a bit of a reluctant pirate, but he soon got into the groove of things, especially because back then, we discussed this on our episode, it's like, it was actually you were treated a lot fairer as a pirate than you would have been working like a legitimate job on like a navy ship, you know, like if you're in a merchant navy ship or
your
something like that.
Your life expectancy on those merchant ships were like, it was like
fuck all.
Like,
yeah,
it's just like you expect to live maybe 13 months if you were to do it for that long, and like, their life expectancy if they were just doing that was like incredibly short.
You got paid a pittance. You had no fucking say on what was going on or anything like that. But as a pirate, you did have a bit more of a say. It was a bit more democratic, which is, you know, you think it was the other way around, but
that's pirates to him, were.
Well, exactly. Yeah, I was going to say. So, basically this captain that brought him on, this whole Davis, he was killed in a skirmish at one point, and the remaining crew voted Barrett as their new captain because he was such a good navigator and he was really good with the crew and everything. He captured over 400 ships during his pirating career, which is more than any other pirate of the time. And as Franco just alluded to there, he created the Pirate's Code, which is, I think it was, how many was it? 10? Was it 10? 10 rules?
I think maybe 11. I think
10 or 11. I can't remember now. But yeah. it got adapted by other pirates down the line. But originally, this new code, it set out a lot of what we consider pirate adjacent today that still survives. So, like, there was things like a bit more about democratically choosing where you'd go next and things like that. Everyone had a vote, basically.
It was splitting a bit more, the plunder quite radically.
Splitting the booty and the plunder, that's it, yeah. And also one of the rules we love is that Barty actually put a rule in this like all-important codex that you're allowed to have a drink on the ship even after lights out, but you got to do it under. You got to do it in the lower deck because you don't want lights on to show if there's any enemies.
You got to drink under the pale moonlight, don't you?
Oh, that was it, yeah. And we like to say that it was like almost a ruse that Barty the was like, yeah, trying
he was
to
madly in love with his first mate. And he was like, you can drink, but not in your room. It has to be under the pale moonlight.
And Jeremy the first mate has to sit on my lap while he's drinking his grog, okay?
Yeah.
But yeah, so he was very influential through the whole of like the pirate age. Also, he dressed in like he had a real flamboyant dress sense. He apparently wore like a big red coat like Captain Hook, and lots of jewelry. He loved like sort of showing off like his fashion. He also was one who invented the first Jolly Roger, apparently. Okay. Which is, you know, synonymous with pirates these days. Basically, a load of the things we associate today with pirates came from a Welshman, which I absolutely love. And like you mentioned earlier, Frank, the only downside was he was teetotal, which makes me really gutted because even if I could have a drink with him, he wouldn't actually partake. He'd be on the old like non-alkies or something. And also, he was killed in an ambush where all his men were hungover and half pissed from the night before. So keeping himself sober, it didn't actually do him much good in the end, did it? He might as well have gotten on the lash with the boys the night before because like he was dead anyway. But yeah, that's my third choice. Barty the great, cool little Welsh pirate kind of guy.
Yeah, do you want to hit us with your third and final?
My original idea was I was possibly going to mention like Eulaw and Owain Gwynedd, but I figured since you guys talked about Owain Gwynedd before, where, you know, they can go see, check out the other podcast episode for that.
Now you're getting it.
Nice.
I'm slowly looking on. So what I was going to mention is more of a moment, and it's perhaps a bit more nerdy, but, you know, I hope you guys knew what you were signing up for when I was arriving.
We love that stuff.
And it's more of the 9th century as a whole, because it was a really, really big sort of political change in Wales, and it's one that a lot of people don't really think about. Like, you might think like the conquest of Wales or the Normans arriving. Mm. But the 9th century was kind of bookended by almost kind of weird, in some parts, really sort of apocalyptic, kind of like thunderstorms raining down, sort of huge change for like basically every kingdom in Wales. So I figured that could be my third one.
Yeah.
Sounds great.
So what were these things?
Yeah, so... So in the north of Wales, towards the very end of the 9th century, I think you guys have mentioned Rodri Mawr in an episode before.
Yeah. And Rodri Mawr means like, so Mawr in Welsh, it means like big, but really it means like the great. It's like, it's what you'd say in Welsh is the great.
Yeah. So he and his dad became king of Gwynedd at the very start of the 9th century after they had this big old civil war. Because the king was possibly illegitimate, possibly the son of a local woodsman, and all sorts of political intrigue. And their whole original, like, ancient sort of Gwynedd dynasty that sort of went all the way back to just after the Romans left came to an end. And Mervyn sort of sailed over from the Isle of Man, and his son Rodri Mawr, as you guys know, brought together like a huge portion of Wales.
Yeah.
But because of this, because of these conquests, we find that all of these sort of ancient lineages to sort of suddenly die out, and in all sorts of kind of sometimes kind of strange ways. Like one of the last kings of Powys is just sort of mentioned as dying in Rome. He's just sort of there, probably on a pilgrimage. Some people have theorized that he was in exile.
Like walking all the way to Rome from Wales, yeah. It just blows my mind. It's like, I just don't get it. I don't know how it would happen.
And what I find even more interesting is because he died there, he potentially was buried there because he was a king. He was received as a king. There might be some sort of worn out, unmarked gravestone somewhere in Rome.
Cool. That's crazy.
Yeah.
I'd love to see that.
But he just sort of died in Rome. There's a king's in Dovid who are
sorry.
When in Rome, die. Yeah, that's common phrase.
You know.
The kings of Dovid, which is like modern day Pembrokeshire, Carmarthenshire. I think it was like six of them died within like 18 years, and there's records of like lightning storms ravaging that part of Wales, and one of the kings was beheaded by an unknown sort of rival.
Nice. Bad day to be a Welshman. Yeah.
It's just that whole, like the 9th century, like obviously there's violence because it's, you know, it's history. There's violence all over the place, but the 9th century just seemed to have everybody all of a sudden.
It's like Final Destination movie or something, but set in the 9th century or across 100 years even,
It's always, and like the Welsh, well, I suppose it must be everywhere, but because we see today Wales as one whole, back then, it was still, you know, lots of principalities and kingdoms, wasn't it? And so it was really violent and lots of infighting and less of a cohesion amongst themselves. So,
Well, as you said, everybody loved to fight each other. Welsh one, they love to fight each other too.
We always say how weird it is that you wouldn't be a Welshman back then. You would be a man of Dyved or a man of like Deheubarth or something. You had a real sort of connection to that. And everyone around you was kind of like different, your enemy, you know. It's like strange, isn't it, to think that as it goes on, obviously, like in those instances where we get a leader, I don't know, like Llywelyn Ap Gruffydd or something like that, or Glyndŵr, where they manage to unite Wales as a whole, we can do some really amazing things. But so often, we just devolve into infighting.
Yeah. There's even like Llywelyn, like a lot of the other Welsh kings didn't see him as a sort of unifying force. Like the kings of Powys sided with the English against him because he wanted their land.
Was it the guy who led the Welsh force along with the English? It was something Gwenwynin or Gwenwyn? I can't remember his name.
Oh, yeah, Gwenwynwyn.
Gwenwynwyn, He was like another, he was, you know, a traitorous bastard against his own countrymen. But yeah, like you said, even him, someone we consider modern day, then, like a uniting force,
other way around,
he didn't get everyone.
He's like a traitor. He, like, come to take his
lands. That's what I was going to say. He wouldn't have seen himself as a traitor to the Welsh. To him, he was protecting his own interests.
Exactly. So his lands were under, you know, if Llywelyn were to win, he'd be kicked out of his lands, wouldn't he? Because I think hadn't his dad or something, or his granddad been exiled before by Llywelyn's dad? And it was like, so he had a bit of a bugbear anyway.
Yeah, Captain Powys gets really complicated at that time because it splits into like two.
That borderline is just shifting. That's how you end up with 2% English DNA, isn't it, mate? You know,
thanks. Henry VIII drawing it in. Thanks for that one. Who else do we have? We also had the King of Ceredigion was drowned. Also, we don't know who that was by either. It could have been his own men or possibly Rodri Mawr in a bid to sort of take over his land. Unfortunately, I know you guys from South Wales, I don't know what happened to those ones. They're the only ones I don't have.
Let's just assume it was bad for them as well.
There was a big dynasty change because the king who was conquered by like the Lord of Cardiff, whoever that was like a new guy on the block, as they say. But I don't remember because it's honestly, if you ever, the kings of South Wales are so complicated because they keep joining, like it was called Gwynllyg and Gwent, like modern day like Glamorgan and Monmouthshire. They keep like mixing and matching, like some will be kings of both, some will be kings of one or the other, and it's I've had a very difficult time trying to keep track of which one.
Whenever you delve back to the great kings or great princes of Wales, there's very rarely them from down southeast because it's like it's such a hodgepodge, because obviously it's like one of the first to go when the Romans came over, and presumably when like the Anglo-Saxons came over as well, because it's a bit more lowland, isn't it? It's nowhere near as many like hills, not nearly as hard to navigate. So it's probably one of the first places to go.
Yeah, which is a shame, really. Like sort of modern day, like Morgannwg Glamorgan had like about 200 less years of independence than basically everywhere else in Wales. And that's sort of when those like big figures are produced, like Llywelyn the First, Llywelyn the Second, Lord Rhys. Yeah. There's probably one from Powys. Ironically, I don't know them.
Yeah,
but no, it's a shame, really, because it's
sort of lost. Like, well, what could have been in there? Again, it's that same thing, that alternate history.
Yeah, that was my at least moment in Welsh history. The 9th century, all the old dynasties are gone, a bunch of new ones are in, and those new ones from like Gwynedd would give rise to the ancestors of people like Owain Glyndwr, Henry the VII, Eminem allegedly, although I don't know if that's true or not.
I saw that as well, I love that. Someone's writing this down as like the thesis, and they're going, Eminem, that's going down, right?
There was a Wales Online article saying as if that's true.
Mm-hmm. I remember doing that on our Welsh Facts episode where it was like he's got a descendant from
him and Thomas Mapper for the Third, mate, you know? Yeah. Tom Cruise, baby.
Well, that's a good one. That's it's very different to my final one, which is Operation Julie, which is
I love that episode you guys did, and that was so interesting. I liked how the sheep chewed up the was it the camera wires or something?
Yeah,
I was walking in public and I just burst out laughing, and I think everyone thought I was insane.
Well, for those who don't know, real quick brief history, it's like one of the biggest and still probably, I think it's still classed as like the biggest British drugs bust. It was a huge undercover operation to unearth like the biggest manufacturing of LSD, I think, in the world. And it was done by these Oxford graduates and pharmacists. And they hunkered down in like mid Wales, so like Powys area. And it was like, it highlighted, like, because also they didn't see themselves as criminals. They were like making this LSD as like a way of change in society, and they really saw themselves as like not the baddies but the guys who are like coming here to free your mind, bro. And they were like I really like it because it's just such a funny Welsh story. Like, things like they get loads of these undercover officers to like try and infiltrate them, but then the undercover officers end up turning into hippies. It's like based in the 70s as well. they get induced by this society and they're like, oh shit, and they give up being undercover officers just to become hippies, and they get like just get really so stoned. Good,
I can imagine them going, you got to take this bit of LSD now or I think you're a copper. Yeah. All right, I'll try this. And they go, man, this is sweet. I'm going to have to keep this up. I'm not going back to the cops.
And like the officers in charge call things like Officer Dick or Detective Dick, and it's all like the classic Welsh names. It's like, and they're so rural and pretty nice. Like,
you say that as if they've written that just for you. They go, Professor Dick.
No, but do you know, like Dick,
Constable
like,
Fanny.
But you have names like, oh, Shemaya, it's Dick Jones here. It's like, you know, very Welsh and just like quite unoffensive. And he's like, this guy like is like leading one of the, or like uncovering one of the biggest drug operations in the world. And he's just like, oh, show my boys, what's in it? Like, just really, like very like gentle. And it, like when people got arrested at the end, he was like, he was sorry for them. And he just seemed like a kind, like local community, like police officer. And he was uncovering.
They were just a bunch of boys having a laugh, weren't they, at the end of the day?
Oh, I understand boys will be boys. Them, like... But you got to think, you've got to be careful, don't you? You can't be too bad. and again, when they tried to like, they're trying to find where these like locations were, they set up like listening, recording stuff, but because it was rural Wales, sheep kept eating all the wires and so they couldn't get like anything properly recorded. And it's just like, it's just a fun, I mean, it's, yeah, you know, maybe mass drug production isn't always seen as lighthearted and fun, but only in Wales can become this silly, funny.
But this time it was, right? Yeah.
And it's like inspired musicals. It's like it's also the biggest drug bust in UK history ever. Mm. It's like it was the most forces ever in British history came together, and it's just these people. It was like in like rural Wales in like these little farmhouses making. Like the thing that was occurring.
That really is Powys for you. Sums it up in a sentence. Yeah.
Well, Powys has like it's even to today. I think I mentioned this before. Like Powys draws a lot of people who like are like commune living, like free spirited, like slightly different. Like it's counterculture, isn't it, or like subculture?
And you get a lot of hippie-ish people. There's a lot of people I went to school with who are very hippie-ish people. They're lovely, but some. Yeah, it's a lot. You don't expect to see it. It's like Bristol and like Powys.
Yeah.
Well, I remember some guy got arrested for growing weed because it was snowing, and all of a sudden his roof had no snow in it at all. And
I saw that. Yeah, I think I saw it. That was must have been on Wales Online or something as well.
Probably. Sure, it was a big story. I was a kid. Huge at the time. I read about
bros account, like sort of terrace houses, wasn't it? Like a couple of inches of snow on it, and it was like, yeah, that was it. Yeah.
I had a friend from Paris at university. He lived with us, and he was he was a big, tall stoner, he was very funny, but like just such a Paris from the 70s kind of era. Yeah. And I came down one time, and he was cooking something in the saucepan. I was like, "What are you cooking?" He went, "Oh, I'm just cooking up ketamine." And he was boiling ketamine in crystal form. And I was like, "All right, mate, cool."
Sweet. Yeah, nice one, mate. I'm
and then one time he bought loads of pills to go to a festival, and he locked himself out of his bedroom and he left all the pills on the bed, and he had to try and get he couldn't call the landlord to come get the spare key because obviously she'd see all the drugs in his bed, so he bribed a locksmith to come in and like look the other way to not say anything.
It's not all fun and games, is it, in that profession?
I'm conscious of time, so I'll. We want to wrap up though by running through. Well, not wrap up, but we want to move on to having a chance to talk to you because you've done something incredible. Like you've made a really, really popular, really successful YouTube channel and engaging, inclusive. It's fun. It's not stuffy.
Well, weren't you lucky? Wasn't that a delightful little interview amongst Tales of Wales and the Cambrian Chronicler? You can listen to the rest of that interview at Patreon, where we do a bit of a deep dive into how he came about. Because if you don't know who he is, you better get to know. He's got like a million views on every video he does. He's the real fucking McCoy. Not like us chancers. So if you want to hear more about him and how he came about and some other tidbits, you can head over to Patreon, which is probably patreon.com/TalesWales, I imagine. And then, get around that. Diolch yn gwrando. Also, if you've made it this far and you haven't left a review, go on, mate. So help us out. Like, come on, do it. We love you. All about. Bye.